All praise is due to Allah.
May Allah's peace and blessings be upon His Prophet Muhammad, his companions and followers. To proceed, we'll continue by Allah's will, explaining the book of Itmam al-Wafa, Israt al-Khulafa, on the biography of the Khulafa by Imam al-Sabri, may Allah be pleased with him. So as we stated the last time, that the author, may Allah have mercy on him, the way he organized the chapters was that he would discuss the conquest of Iraq and Persia during the period of Umar ibn al-Khattab, may Allah be pleased with him. So he just covers the entire conquest from the beginning to the ending. So other things happened in between, he just discussed all the conquests in succession. Then he goes back and he'll discuss then the conquest of the area of Sham as well, and the Roman lands. And start even from the battle of Yarmouk, which happened before the death of Abu Bakr as-Siddiq, may Allah be pleased with him. And then covering everything else that happened in the area of Hisham from that time until the end of the conquest. And this is different, a departure from other books, right? They will go through the battles in historical order. So they will have, you know, for example, maybe a battle in Sham, then a battle in Iraq, then a battle in Roma, then a battle in Iraq again, and a battle in Iraq, then a battle in Sham, or et cetera, et cetera. But in this case, the author just clumped all the battles of one geographical location together, all of them together. Then he moves on to the different location. And this is good because you could actually follow you have some type of continuity between the battles, and you remember the characters in each battle, etc. So now we've reached to the chapter of the conquest of Sham. So the author says, we left the Muslims winners at the region after conquering Al-Yarmouk. So he says that we left the Muslims victorious in the land of Yarmouk, and it was, and the leader of the people of the Muslim armies at that time was Abu Ubaidah Amir ibn al-Jarrah al-Amiri, and it was also with the help of Saifullah, or the Allah's sword, as he was nicknamed, Khalid ibn al-Walid. So as you remember, during the leadership of Abu Bakr as-Siddiq, may Allah be pleased with him, Khalid ibn al-Walid used to be the general of the Muslims. And upon the death of Abu Bakr as-Siddiq, and then Umar ibn al-Khattab becoming a Khalifa, as you remember, this happened, the passing of Abu Bakr as-Siddiq happened while this battle of Yarmouk was taking place. And immediately during this battle, while the battle was waging, Umar ibn al-Khattab sent a letter to appoint Abu Ubaidah to be the leader of the army and remove Khalid ibn al-Walid. And we discussed some of the reasons why people speculate that Umar did such a thing. But Abu Ubaidah, in the middle of the battle, chose to keep that quiet. He didn't want to panic the people and to confuse them and to tell them that Abu Bakr died and etc. So they left it. He didn't tell anyone until the battle was over. May Allah be pleased with them all.
Hatta
And when Abu Ubaidah was still appointed, Khalid ibn Walid continued to conquer the lands of Hisham, as we'll see. So he wasn't just demoted from the army or anything, but he kept leading the army going forward. But the emir of the regions of that area was Abu Ubaidah ibn Jarrah. And as we said, that Abu Ubaidah was a gentle man, and he was actually very similar to Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. So Shaykh al-Islam ibn Taymiyyah said one of the wisdoms behind this is that if the emir is a strong-minded person, a strong person, then his assistant or his the general should be then a more lenient, gentle person. And if it's the opposite, if the Khalifa is lenient and gentle, he should have a strong, willful general. So at the time of Abu Bakr, he was a very gentle person. He had a very strong person as Khalid ibn Walid as his general. And when Umar ibn Khattab took over, he was a very strong-willed person. So he appointed Abu Ubaid as, who is a gentle person, as the general of the army. So this is really the idea of building a compatible team, if you will. And there was another issue, because Khalid ibn Walid had never lost a battle, ever. And even when he was the leader of the Mushrikeen, he was still victorious. And he was, in fact, responsible for the defeat of the Muslims against the Mushrikeen, especially at Uhud. And obviously his victory was from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, but Umar was worried that, people will think that victory was coming from Khalid ibn Walid and not from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and that people will worry that if Khalid does not fight, then the Muslims will lose, and etc. So, you don't want to rely on just the worldly means. Yes, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala granted the Muslims victory through Khalid ibn Walid, but it's not Khalid ibn Walid himself causing the victory to take place. And as we know also, the final point is that Umar ibn al-Khattab had issues with the fashion in which Khalid ibn Walid divided the booty between the people. And Umar ibn al-Khattab didn't like that even in the time of Abu Bakr, because the way Khalid ibn Walid will divide it, he will give more money to prestigious people in the city, and he claimed that, or he at least explained his decisions, that he wanted to make sure that he had the influential people on his side, meaning on Khalid ibn Walid's side. And he would go and make these divisions, and how he'll give to the other people. It was in a way, he didn't ask the permission of anybody. Khalid ibn Walid, may Allah be pleased with him, will go and take his own initiative, and that was his own ijtihad. May Allah be pleased with him. As you remember, Umar ibn al-Khattab proposed that he will divide, like Umar ibn al-Khattab, Khalid ibn Walid will just fight, and Umar ibn al-Khattab or someone else will divide the money. And Khalid ibn Walid refused. He said that I either do everything or do nothing.
وكان عمر رضي الله عنه يعني عاتبا على هذا الامر وكذا، فكان هذه وجهه يعني امير المؤمنين رضي الله عنه.
As you know, we've said before, Khalid, Umar ibn al-Khattab used to love Khalid as well and used to respect him. So there was no hatred between them, there was some differences of opinion. So either way, as we know, Khalid ibn Walid relinquished the leadership and Abu Ubaid became the leader of the Muslims in Sham. So after the victory of Yarmouk, Abu Ubaidah heard that some of the Romans who had escaped from this battle went to this town of Fihl. And also that the town of Damascus was receiving a huge reinforcement from the Caesar, who sent a large army. So Abu Ubaid then sent a letter to Umar ibn al-Khattab asking him which city should he attack first. Should he attack the town where these survivors, I guess, from the previous battle went, or Fihl, or should he go to Damascus where a large army was sent by Caesar? So Umar ibn al-Khattab said to send a small group to Fihl to keep them busy and for Abu Ubaidah to march towards the mission. And he said that it is the fortress of Hisham and the house of its king, meaning that that's where the capital of Caesar is. So Abu Ubaidah sends a small group of his army to Fihl and it sieged it. And he positioned another smaller army on this route between Hisn, between Damascus and Fihl. So between the two towns, so that he will prevent any reinforcements from coming to Fihl. Well, I'm sorry, no, he put an army between Homs and Dimashq, because Homs was at that time the capital of Rome. It was the capital of the Roman Empire. And he put another army between Dimashq, between Damascus and Palestine. So he was trying to basically cut any aid to come in into Damascus once the battle starts. And Abu Ubaidah marched towards Dimashq, and then the army was led in the front by Khalid ibn al-Walid.
ترجع بعيدك إلى دمشق وانتقل تعالى إلى فلسطين والأردن
And he appointed the leader of Palestine and Jordan in, you know, in his position, in the position of, in the position of Abu Ubaidah, for temporary Amir was Amr ibn al-As. May Allah be pleased with him. And Amr ibn al-As used to be the commander of the army who fought in Palestine and Jordan. So the author moved on now to the conquest of Dimashq. So once they reached Damascus, the people went and took refuge and the Muslims sieged that city and surrounded it. And the siege lasted 70 days, or 70 nights, the author says. So he said, one night while Khalid was sieging the city, he heard this commotion. So he sent someone to spy to know to spy the, you know, the news and see what's happening. And the author says that he frequently spied upon his enemies to be able to take advantage of any situation that might arise. So then he said that the informant came back to him and said the patriarch had a son and he had a big party because of the birth of his son and the army got drunk. And that's where the noise was coming from. So the noise was coming from these drunk soldiers who were making a lot of noise. So what Omar Khalid ibn al-Walid went and ran and took these like ladders that are made out of and cables and just, you know, throw them to go over the wall. So like these like almost nooses, if you will. They take it, they swing it, and if it catches into something, they try to tie it onto whatever it catches on the other side of the wall so they could climb. And they said they also had, it's like a ladder, but it's made out of cords instead. So, you know, it's like it's not solid, but you could still climb on top of it. So basically, they're taking advantage of the fact that the soldiers are drunk. And they don't know, they're not being able to protect the wall. So Khalid ibn al-Walid took Al-Qa'qa. Al-Qa'qa hasn't gone to Iraq, as you remember. He was a big hero in the conquest of many places in Iraq. So this was prior to his departure to Iraq. So Qaqa and some of other courageous men like him went with Khalid ibn al-Walid and then they climbed the wall. Khalid said to his army, if you hear takbir on the other side of the wall, so come to the doors. So they threw the ropes that they had and two of them caught. Two of them were able to latch onto a surface on the other side so they could climb.
So
and they climbed. So they went, once they went around the wall, they went and ran to the door and opened the door and they made takbir. So when they made takbir, the Muslims charged towards the door and the door was open. Then the people started hearing the takbir of the Muslims and they were confused because they were drunk. You know, they couldn't do anything basically. So a group of them ran to Abu Ubaidah asking for protection. And Abu Ubaidah then entered the city to protect the people and grant him protection. So basically Dimashq had two doors. One door was Khalid, protected, was attacked by Khalid, and the other side was where Abu Ubaid was. So when Abu Ubaidah was there, so when they saw that they were losing to on the one side to Khalid, they went to the other exit and asked for peace treaty with Abu Ubaidah. And Abu Ubaidah accepted and entered the city, and you know, he was granted them protection. So he met with Khalid in the middle of the city. The other says that they met in the middle of town. One of them entered the city peacefully, the other person met the town, you know, Khalid ibn Walid entered the town and you know, willing to fight. So then Abu Ubaidah told him about the peace treaty and Khalid ibn Walid stopped fighting. And so the first half that was opened, you know, in the battlefield, they accepted, they considered that it was also part of the peace treaty now. And then Abu Ubaidah informed Umar ibn al-Khattab of, you know, of the conquest. And then Abu Ubaidah appointed Yazid ibn Abi Sufyan as the leader of that city of Damascus. And he also led an army to conquer some of the shores of this area, like the neighboring towns that were, these different towns that are called Sayyid and Araqa and Jubail and Beirut. So all of these are, you know, neighboring cities. They're not too far, about 24 or 48 miles near on the shore, basically. And Mu'awiyah ibn Abi Sufyan also went and marched and went to the city of Qaysariya, and he conquered it as well, which is located in Palestine now. And Muawiyah used to, you know, had a great role in the conquest of Muslims. He was also the rioter of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and he was the companion of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He had a great success for the Muslim Ummah. And, you know, some people might come to, like, talk badly of Muawiyah because of what happened later between him and Ali ibn Abi Khattab, Ali ibn Abi Talib, I'm sorry, but Ahl-Sunnah, they just kind of don't overlook these issues, but they try to remember the good things that the companions did, regardless of some disagreements that they might have had between each other. So after the battle of Damascus, Abu Ubaidah marched back to Tihl, where, you know, he had sent a small army, and the army was again led by Khalid ibn al-Walid. So immediately after conquering Damascus, they went back to the city of Fih. So brother in the audience says that the city now of Fih is called Tabaqat Fih, the plateau, I guess, of Fih, or the plateau of farmers.
قال أما أبو عبيدة رضي الله عنه فسار إلى سحل وعلى من قدم فيه خالد
So the army was led in the front by Khalid, and on each side was Umar ibn al-As and Abu Ubaid. So on the right was Umar ibn al-As, and on the left was Abu Ubaid, and on the front was Khalid ibn al-Walid. And the leader of the cavaliers was Dirar ibn al-Azwar al-Asadi. Now the foot soldiers were led by Ayyad ibn al-Ghani. And also Shrahbir ibn al-Hasan. And the leader of the entire army was Shrahbil. So the leader of the entire army was Shrahbil ibn al-Hasan. Although the Amir of this region, Abu Ubaidah, is amongst his leaders of one of the smaller sections of the army. Despite him being the leader of the entire army, he appointed somebody else to run the army. Although he is the leader of the Muslims in this entire region. So you can see that you don't have to be doing everything as a leader. So Shurahbil went with the people and to Fihl and sieged it. So one night the Romans were trying to surprise the Muslims by night to attack them at night. But then he said that, however, Shurahbil was always prudent, and he always had army, you know, they had always surveillance around during the day or during the night, and this was based on the warning of Umar ibn al-Khattab radiallahu anhu, who was always advising his army to always be on alert, to be prepared for attack of an enemy at night. They were always prepared that they might be attacked at any moment.
Thank you.
So then the Muslims, you know, were pretty, so they fought them badly during the night and until and during the next day. So but then by the evening of the next day, the Romans lost their power and they lost the battle. So what they tried to do, the Romans tried to dig a trench around the city, but they made it muddy, so that if people to cross, you just drown, kind of, you can't go through. So when these people were trying to surprise the Muslims at night, and then some of them who were trying to run away and go back into their fortress, you know, they fell into their own trap, and they just were like drowning into this mud, and they couldn't make it across. So then they conquered that city of Fihl, and you know, they sent to and then you know they conquered it, and they sent the news to Umar ibn al-Khattab that they conquered it, and they sent him 1/5 of the booty. So then they divided the army into two. After this battle, it was decided that they would divide the army into two, and one part of the army was led, the first half of the army was led by Shurahbi ibn Hasana, and he sent him towards the town of Baysan. And he sent the other group to Tabariya. And it was in this Tabariya is a big city in Jordan, or at that time it was a big city in Jordan. And also, so then these two cities were also conquered. So they didn't say who was the leader of the second group. The first group, Shurahbil, conquered Baysan, and the other group conquered Tabariya. And they became also similar to what happened in Dimashq, and it was a peaceful conquest. So then, Sir Abu Ubaidah then marched, took Khalid with him, and marched towards the town of Hims. As you can see, that Abu Ubaidah always included Khalid ibn Walid in his operations. So when they reached to this town called Ammar Jarrum, so Heracles has sent two armies to fight the Muslims. As you know, Hims was the capital of the Romans at the time. The Caesar lived in Hims. And this is the same Heracles that fought the Prophet ﷺ in the Battle of Tabuk. Okay, almost. So this is the same Caesar from the time of the Prophet ﷺ. This is not the time of Umar ibn al-Khattab radiallahu anhu.
بعثهما في رفض القتال أحدهما بنياسة بطريق موجودة.
So one of the armies that was sent by Hercules was led by this patriarch. His name was Sodar, and the second army was led by Shagash al-Rumi. I'm not sure who this person is. Shagash al-Rumi. So although this person was a patriarch, the first person, Todar, who was still in that time, you know, you could be a religious figure and still be a military figure as well. So then what they decided to do, they split the army into two, and Khalid took on one of the first army of the Romans, and Abu Ubaidah stood in front of the second army. But he said the next day, when Khalid woke up, he couldn't see the army of Tawdar or his army. Tawdar or his army, he couldn't, there was nothing left, there was no trace of them. Although they were in front of them the day before. So what happened was, Tawdar went to her and he wanted to go and conquer Damascus again, because he had heard that it had fallen to the Muslims. So Tudor thought that this is the entire Muslim army and this is it. So he wanted to be smart and move and go and reopen Damascus, but he didn't know that the Muslims left an army behind to protect those cities and left a Muslim appointed to run the city.
قال ظانا أن ليس بها حامين يعني يظن أنه ليس فيها يعني جيش يحميها يعني في دمشق فعلم خالد قصده فتبعه من سكمة الخالد يعني لما
فخالد was quick so he realized what he had done so he followed him Khalid basically right away figured out, he said, well then the only thing that this person could have been doing is trying to beat us to Damascus. And you know, Khalid went with that and they found out that it was true that he had gone to Damascus. And at the same time, it was the news reached Yazid ibn Abi Sufyan, who was the leader of the Mishq at that time, that the Romans are coming to that town. Also, the author, so one of the brothers said that the name of the leader, his name is Theodore. So Sheikh Walid is saying that when you usually Arabize a Latin name, one of the scholars of linguistics just said an Arabized Latin name, usually the Arabs play with the Latin names, meaning that they give them different spellings and different pronunciations and, you know, nobody agrees. So in this case, it might have been Theodore, but, you know, it's been spelled Todor, almost.
Yeah. فخرج مليد لاحقه من جهة من خلفه والآن من أمامه من جهة دمشق كان يجيب إيه علم المخلوقين هذا الجيش وخرج لليد بالعقاب. قال فاستعد للقائي كم حصل فوزا بين الجيشين فأخذ هو وزنه انحصر بين الجيشين فوقع يعني في شكل عمله في الأصلح إيه
So now what happened was, since Yazid ibn Muawiyah was prepared for him, and then behind him was Khalid ibn Walid, so this guy Theodore was stuck in the middle between the two armies, and he was very easily defeated and he was killed. The other says that very few had escaped. So and then now they're calling him Shanish. It seems that there's a typo in my book. So it says concerning Abu Ubaidah, so he went and faced the army of Shanish and beat him. And by the time he beat him, Khalid bin Walid returned. So when by the time Khalid bin Walid had returned, the battle was over. Abu Ubaidah had won. So now the author moves on to the conquest of him. So now Khalid and Abu Ubaidah rejoined forces again and they marched towards him. So when the emperor, you know, Hercules heard because you remember in the times of the Persians, the battles of Persians, the emperor of the Persians, or Kisra, which is the title of the emperor, every time they lost their capital, you know, the Jir at that time will go and move the capital from one city to the other, and the Muslims will keep conquering it. And a similar thing happened here in Rome with the Romans. So basically, Caesar sent a letter to the patriarch of that town to tell him to move into the capital, and he would go to Ar-Ruha, which is the town that is between these two rivers. Which is between Dajla and Furat, these two big rivers. And it used to be called the island because it gives the semblance that it's actually, you know, an island floating in the middle, but it's not. So then the Muslims, while they are marching towards Hims, they pass by this town called Ba'labek. And they conquered it. And it's about between Damascus and this town Ba'labek is about 12 farsakh, which is 36 miles. It's also
مش
This town is in Lebanon, Ba'alabek.
فلما المسلمون تغلبوا ببعلبك ففتحوه، ولما وصلوا حلب حاصروها فتحصن اهلها منتظرين مدى الفراق. وصل المسلمون الى حلب وحاصروا حلب.
So they went. By the time they reached Homs, Heracles ran away, and they were actually waiting on Heracles to send them aid. But then when they waited for a long time and they didn't get any help from Heracles, who just ran away to save his skin. They sent a letter to Abu Ubaidah, you know, to strike a peace treaty between them, just like the people of Damascus did earlier. And now they appointed Ubadah ibn Samit, may Allah be pleased with him, and he was appointed as the leader of Hims.
توجه أبو عبيدة رضي الله عنه إلى حماة فتلقاه أهلها مجرمين فصالحهم على الجزية والقرار. أصلا الجزية هي ضريبة تؤخذ في من الأحراج، يعني كان في عهد عمر بن العاص كان يأخذون دينارا عن كل قرش.
And basically they agreed on a jizya amount of about one dinar for each individual, and the children and the invalid and the people who could not pay it did not pay it, or the poor, or etc. And additionally, this was on the individuals, but also like the lands, they had to pay 10% also of any production that they will make. So they, you know, if they had like a farm or anything like that, you'll have to give 10% of the income from your land to the Muslims. And obviously, these people are not Muslims. This will go to the community channel.
قال ثم سار نحو شيء بلد قريب من حمام.
فلان أبو عبيدة
وقصد بعدها المعركة بين حماس وحلب وفتحها كذلك، ثم اللاذقية من أعمال حلب فملك عنوة وهرب
في الكتاب. So as we said, Ubadah ibn Samit was the leader of Hims, and then Abi Ubadah went and conquered this town of Humat, and he conquered and he went there and also struck a peace treaty. Then he marched toward this town of Shayzar, and similarly it was a peaceful conquest. And then he went to Ma'arra, and he did the same. He conquered it peacefully. And then to the Baqiya. So the Muslims fought these people. These people didn't want to accept a peaceful treaty, so they fought and the Muslims conquered them. So basically they refused to take the jizya, but they ran away. They abandoned their land. So the Muslims took the land, but then after a while they sent them a letter saying that we want to come back to our land and we will accept a peaceful treaty. So Abu Ubaidah accepted, But the Muslims built a masjid there. Now we move on to the town of Ibn Nasrin. So the author says that then Abu Ubaidah sent Allah to Abu Khalid, he sent him to this town of Qunaysirin. And like I said, the distance is marhala. Marhala means period, and then I guess in that time, marhala means one day of travel.
قال فلما بلغ الحاضر الحاضر برضو مدينة قرب حلب.
So as we said, Abu Ubaidah sent Khalid to conquer the city of Qin Nisrin, but when he reached this town of Hadr, he met a large army of Romans. They were there for some reason.
فلما بلغ الحاضر قابله جمع عظيم من الروم عليهم قائد من الميمان فقاتلهم خالد حتى هزمهم وقصد في النفرين فتحصن أهلها منه في خارج طريقه لما وصل إلى الحاضر قابله
And the leader of the Romans in this town of Al-Hadr, his name was Minas. So then Khalid fought him and beat him, and he kept marching towards Qin Nisrin. So then the people there went into their fortresses. They had a lot of fortresses in their town. They went and hid in their fortress. So Khalid ibn Walid said, so if you were hidden, he said, if you were even hidden in the clouds, Allah would have raised us to you, would have lowered you to us. So no matter what, you couldn't hide. So basically, there is no escape. There is no running away from us. If you were in the sky, Allah will have either raised us or lowered you, so that we'll face each other. So they looked into their situation, they saw what the Muslims have been doing lately in the towns, so they decided that they would not fight, and they accepted, and they wanted the same terms as the people of Dimashq, and they wanted to just get a peace treaty. But then Khalid did not accept it. He did not want to give them the same terms as the term of the people of Dimashq.
ليه بس حطوا المصري يعني محكومة جميعا وقالوا يعني على قدر المنين قصوا يعني
So Khalid said that we'll give the same terms only if we can destroy these fortresses, because he was afraid that they might revolt or something. So Khalid destroyed the fortresses.
فترك يعني تبعه خالد رضي الله عنه أدرج يعني خالد جاوز الكرب إلى العدو يعني كان وقت الثالث خليفة ملاحقة إيش
So then after this conquest, Khalid bin Walid, when he found out that Herakl had run away from Hims, as we said earlier, so then Khalid kept going towards the area of Sham to follow Heracles to try to catch him. And when we say here the land of the Romans, really it's modern day Turkey, it's not Italy. And so Khalid bin Walid went towards the Sham to follow Heracles, and he also sent Ayad bin Ghanim to the Roman Empire, to the areas of Turkey, to go and conquer further lands. So basically then the Roman king escaped from Sham and he went to Turkey, to Constantinople. So when Umar heard the news of what Khalid has been doing, so he saw that despite that Khalid removed him, Umar removed him from power, he was still conquering land after land after land. He said, Umar appointed himself as a leader. May Allah have mercy on Abu Bakr, who better knew of men than me. Meaning that he knew he was right to appoint him as a leader because he was, you know, he's truly great.
قال فتح حلب وعن قاتلية وغيره. فالحلب هي من مدن كلية حاليا وعن قاتلية من مدن تركية. قال ثم سار أبو عبيدة إلى حلب فتحصن أهلها ثم طلب الصلح بأمان.
So then Abu Ubaidah went to this town of Halab and the people went inside of their fortresses and they asked for protection for themselves and their children and their money and their churches and their fortresses, and Abu Ubaidah accepted. So he accepted their offer under the condition that the Muslims build a mosque there. So then, after this, Abu Ubaidah marched towards Antaqiyah, which is one of the bigger cities in the Roman Empire. I'm sorry, it's called Antaqiyah. I'm sorry, it's the city. It's not a big, it's a different city. So they accepted a peaceful treaty under the condition that the Muslims give them protection to people who might want to leave, who might not want to stay under Muslim rule. So one of the options that the Muslims give you is that if you want to leave the town, you can leave and go to another city that is not under Muslim rule if you wish. So then they moved to So Antaqiyah is actually one of the larger cities of Rome, of the Roman Empire.
ينطبق على المدن الساحلية التي تكون على شواطئ البحار. وأحيانا برضه يطلق الظهور على بعض البلاد الحدودية مثلا المدن الساحلية لكن على حدود الأعداء القلة. هنا أنطاكية هي تعتبر بلد يعني ساحلية قريبين على البحر في
And this town used to be one of the larger, coastal cities. It was about 6 miles away from the water.
فأرسل عمر رضي الله عنه إلى أبي عبيدة أن يركب لها جماعة من المسلمين يرابطون فيها هذه المدن التي يمكن أن يقضوها لهم بحرا يعني ولابد أن يكون فيها جيش أن يرابط حتى إذا قبل من أعداء بحرا وكذا.
So then Umar ibn al-Khattab sent a letter to Abu Ubaidah telling him that he should leave an army of Muslims to protect this ocean side, because just in case, you know, the enemy might attack them from water and they're not prepared for it, they're not watching them.
ويقال بينه وبين حلب خمسة فرق بينه وبين حلب خمسة فرق يعني 15 إلى 2 فصار إلى معرة المحصولين ففتحها كله وبث السرايا لما جاورها من القرى.
So then he marched through the city of Ma'arra. Ma'arra Masrayn. Masrayn. And he also conquered it. And then he sent smaller, he dispatched smaller armies to go and conquer the cities and villages that are surrounding that area. And Abu Ubaidah himself went to the city of Qurs, which is a slightly bigger city. And he conquered then after that. So the author is going quite fast over these regions because he's going to reach Al-Quds soon. That's why he is speeding through these areas. And then he conquered another city called Tel Ghazaz. And then he marched towards the city of Minbij. Which is the city that is near the lake or the river of Furat, which is about 9 miles away from the river. And he also went into a peaceful treaty with them as the people of Hims. And also another condition for the peace treaty was that they informed the Muslims that lived there on the matters of the Romans in case there's anything that they're planning on doing.
قال وولى أبو عبيدة رضي الله عنه على كل كورة فتحها عاملا.
And Abu Ubaidah appointed a worker or a leader upon every city that he's conquered that we've discussed. And he also charged the cities that were risky, you know, with additional army, you know, with additional soldiers to protect it, as we said, like for example that coastal city that we discussed that it might be attacked from the Romans. So any city that shared basically a border with the Romans, they fortified it with more men just in case they might try to surprise and attack them. So then he marched towards Balis, this other city, and at the same time he dispatched a small army led by Habib bin Muslimah to Qasirin, and they conquered that area peacefully. And this was the last time and that was the last this the area that the Muslims conquered in terms of Sham from the area of the river of Furat. So he conquered Syria all the way to the river of Furat, basically. And now he turned around and Abu Ubaidah is going towards Palestine. So and he dispatched a small army with Maysar ibn Masruq al-Abasi, and he aided him with Malik ibn al-Harith, which was nicknamed al-Ashtar, when they went to this town of Baghras. And this city is like on at the bottom of a mountain, basically. This was a big mountain, basically, that connected. So Sheikh Khalid just went through some of the cities that it connects, but it's not that important to our discussion. So basically, all you need to know that the Muslims try to reach the city through the mountains, and this city is at the bottom of a mountain. So when they reached the city, they found a large army of the armies of the Romans that was that had a lot of Arabs, as you remember. You know, the Romans, when they conquered the area of Hisham, when they used to rule the area of Hisham, they ruled over Arabs as well who were Muslims. And this army, this large army basically that was fortified by Arabs, and these Arabs were from the tribe of Ghassan and Tanawwukh and Iyad, and they wanted to go and fortify Hercules, who had, as we said, run away to Constantinople at that time. So then, at the same time, Abu Ubaidah sent an army to Marash, which is this city near Antakya, which we talked about earlier, that the Muslims just conquered, and it's also part of Turkey. And he appointed Khalid bin Walid as a leader. And Khalid bin Walid conquered the city of Marash. And they accepted the exile. They accepted the exile option, where they will just leave, abandon everything that they have there, and go away to another city, because they didn't want to stay. They didn't want to stay under Muslim rule, and they didn't want to accept Islam. And once the people left and the exiled, the Muslims destroyed the city, because these cities usually that are like this, enemies can go and camp in them and take them as headquarters. So they didn't want that to happen. So when the author goes back, it says concerning Amr ibn al-As that was sent to Al-Urdun, to Jordan. So he went to the city of Ajnadain, which is in Palestine now. And it was in this town of Ajnadin is close to Ramla. And the city, there was a large Roman army that was led by this man Artabun. And he used to be known for being a treacherous opponent. So Amr ibn al-Khattab, sieged him, and they were like, holding the siege against him. So when Amr ibn al-Khattab heard that Artabun is fighting against Amr ibn al-As, he said, the Artabun of Rome is facing the Artabun of the Arabs, meaning that Amr ibn al-Khattab believes that Amr ibn al-As is very clever and very smart as well, just like Artabun.
وتجمع عليه جيش هجوم بقيادة الأرطغرل، فحاصره عنهم حصارا شديدا، ثم لم يزل يتجسس حتى عرف.
And he sent a lot of spies until he could know. So Amr ibn al-As kept spying on them. And he was trying to find, basically strategize his attack so that he could pick the weakest section of the army so he could go and attack that area or that fortress. And once he found out what that region was, he went and attacked it and won. So then Artabun ran away after his loss to Ilya. Ilya, which is the Quds, which is in Palestine as well. So then after this, we'll go to the conquest of Al-Quds, but we'll, as you know, Amr ibn al-As is the one who conquered Bayt al-Maqdis. So we'll do this one next time, inshallah. سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك اشهد ان لا اله الا انت استغفرك واتوب اليك الصلاه والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى اله وصحبه اجمعين والصلاه والسلام السلام عليكم ورحمه الله